Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us on this wonderful spring evening. I'm sitting here in my apartment in Massachusetts with the windows open, and it's 80 degrees in my apartment in March. That's crazy. But it's the way things are. Things are pretty crazy. And it's not only this wonderful spring week where we've had unseasonably warm weather, but it's spring break. And if you live in a college town, spring break, Christmas break, which is even longer, and the summertime changes town completely. It's not just that the students and the staff and the instructors and all those people are not running around town. It's that the way the place feels changes very dramatically. And it was most striking when I went out for a walk this evening, and not only were there almost no students around, obviously there's some folks that didn't leave, but usually there'd be a stream of kids walking to or from campus in the same route that I use. There was nobody out, but the feeling was one of calm. And one thing about a college town is when the kids are here, it is not calm. It's chaotic. It's frenetic. Everybody has a lot to do. They're not sure how to do it, but it's really important that they not only do it quickly, but that they look good while they're doing it quickly. And so it gets pretty crazy around here. And I just wanted to have everybody, as you're going through your life, notice those places that you walk through where you feel very calm, where you feel like things are good. You don't have to defend yourself. There's a sense that you're grounded, your life is good. And then there are all the other places, unfortunately, in our society and certainly in cities, all the other places where things are frenetic. You're constantly looking around to figure out what's going on because there's so many people, so much activity, that you really feel surrounded by this chaotic energy. And that awareness, and also noticing that you can make choices about where you put yourself. And a lot of people like to go to the woods, maybe to a stream, because streams have lots of negative ions, among other things that make you feel good. Or go to the beach. More negative ions, the waves, the sand, all of that are negative ion generators. But there are places where it's calm. And all of a sudden, your body relaxes. All of a sudden, your mind relaxes. And people go there to recoup. Well, you can do that every day. And you can also just take it in and acknowledge it when you get one of these great weeks in a college town, when things are finally calm. The kids are going to show up again, I think, tomorrow. And my feeling every time that happens is, who are these people and why are they in my town acting this way? But I do get over it fairly quickly. So just a little moment of thinking about awareness and feeling into what's going on around you. So that's this metaphysical musing for today. And we have a fascinating guest today. Many of you may not know that, and I'll confess it, I'm a geek. Not only do I do this really strange metaphysical shamanistic stuff, but I want to know how it works, and I want to know the patterns, and I want to know what can be repeated, and I want to know what the structure is. I'm a geek. And Yulia Cohen, our guest for this evening, is also an amazing healer, medical intuitive. She's a therapist. She's developed a process called energy restructuring, which I want to hear about. It's done a number of different things and been trained all over the world. And she's got a degree in civil engineering and another degree in computer science. So she is both a healer and a fellow geek. So welcome, Yulia. I'm really excited to talk to you this evening.
Hi, David.
How are you doing today?
This is kind of a gift. I've never thought of myself as a geek. But from now on, I will be initiated into one.
Well, there you go. You know, geek or nerd, depending on which group you hang out with and what word you like.
Right. But it's interesting in terms of wanting to know how things work and what they are and how they can be repeated is just totally my thing. And probably because of my background, both in terms of education and family. My both parents, you know, I'm from Russia, and my both parents were scientists, physicists. So I'm kind of in an unlikely field right now because I was born in I was raised an atheist, right? And in a science family, got scientific training and never believed in any of this. It's like it was gypsy stuff for me. So I think you mentioned in your previous interview, some people look at like what you do or maybe what I do and say, well, we can never repeat that. But I tell these people there was a time not only I couldn't do any of that, I didn't believe in any of that. So there's future for everyone. But it does take around 30 years, which is, I think I'm on that mark around now.
Well, and we'll talk in a minute about what that change was for you, because I know there was a big change for me. You know, my parents were non-believers. They weren't scientists particularly, but they weren't believers. And so I came and I went to a technical high school. I set out to be an engineer, but wasn't good enough in math. So, you know, I had that whole direction and that whole worldview. And then there was a big change for me, and it was experiential. But Russia is very interesting because it's the crossing point for all the scientific research about non-normal reality and paranormal experiences.
Exactly. It's interesting. I don't know what happened now, but it used to be that just like in Britain, you know, Alice Bailey and all the spiritualists, there were people who were well-educated, and it was something you did because you got to a particular level and you had spare time, you know. It was kind of, you know, the in group, right? And I think in Russia there was a point where it was the same thing for scientists. It was kind of like playing with alchemy, playing with energy was kind of the next thing that you could afford when you reached a particular level, rather than being afraid of it.
Right, and because it's a very different culture than, you know, English and American culture, there was room to look at it without, well, you can tell me whether there was a stigma, but my sense is that there was less of a stigma in exploring that than there is in Western culture.
Right. Not only was no stigma, but it was something that almost gave you a particular status.
And I know I've seen a couple of lectures that go back 60, 70 years in some of the research that was done in the former Soviet Union and now in Russia, that was hard science confirming energy fields, confirming how healing works, that all kinds of aspects of the stuff that you and I work with all the time. And people that don't know about that think this stuff is just strange, airy, fairy stuff, and it's not. There's real hard science behind it.
Exactly.
But
they've built cases and they've been doing research and writing papers. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the latest quantum physics findings about how we lose energy and recover energy, the notion of torsion fields comes from, which is spinning fields, comes from Russia again.
Yes, believe it or not, I've heard of torsion fields.
Am I not surprised?
David Wilcock does, I don't know if he still does that presentation, but he used to do a wonderful presentation that took several hours. that took us through all of that Russian research, including the idea of torsion fields and how they were testing for them and measuring them. So, yeah, there's fascinating stuff. I heard Dean Radin from the Institute of Noetic Science, which is the American think tank for hard science about non-normal reality. And he talks about how there are only about 100 scientists doing hard science about this intersection of the hard sciences and non-ordinary reality. And of those 100, six of them are in the United States.
Only six, yeah.
Most of the rest of them are in the Soviet, in Russia and in China, and then spread all over Northern Europe. So we're in the United States, we're way behind on all of this.
Right. It's still unsafe for scientists. It's very easy to lose your prestige and get kind of disqualified.
Right. But I think they're, from what I've heard from several people who will remain unnamed so they won't get in trouble, that there really is a fascination with it. They just can't admit it in public.
Exactly.
Okay. So tell me about your work. You've had an incredibly wide background, and you've come up with your own process that I want to hear more about.
So the way I entered this this paradigm was, I think, as many people, through personal trauma. And when I got married, it was discovered that somehow I had a very large fibroid tumor. And it was the size that, at that time, the decision was to make hysterectomy, which means I wouldn't be able to have children.
Right.
And at that point, I had my science degree, my computer science degree from Brandeis, and I was working for Siemens, which is a German company doing computer science research. And so as an anal engineer, I said, I asked why do I have it? And they said, well, it's because of hormonal imbalance. And I said, how did I get a hormonal imbalance? And they didn't know. And I said, well, if you don't know and, you know, we cut something out, then we really didn't understand what the cause is, right? So the cause is still there, and then it will express itself in something else because we didn't handle the cause. So I said, in computer system, just because something stops working, you don't throw it out. You just find the bug and you write the program. So I said, can we do that? And they looked at me like I came from Mars.
Right.
Because at that point, there were not many women, you know, engineers. I think there were only two other women in my school when I was studying. So I just said, okay, there must be other people who think that way. I didn't know who those people were, and that's how I embarked on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that me and medicine were not thinking the same way.
Right.
And so I think much of my work is informed by that question.
And I think you're right. Most of us wind up having that paradigm shift because of some personal crisis and looking for alternatives. For me, it was back problems. I found out years later it was really a hip problem. And I started studying yoga and eventually meditating, and in those meditations, everything changed. And I had to find people that could explain it to me.
Mm-hmm. And so the system, the name of my system, which is called energy restructuring, when you think restructuring, it's basically going back, finding the point where the problem started, and then put everything back together. It's kind of reverse engineering, or so it's very direct and it's very simple in terms of the underlying principles.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. You're using kind of a computer science metaphor. In a lot of shamanic work, the terminology is soul retrieval.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, finding the pieces of yourself that are in another time doing something they're not supposed to be doing, and bringing them back into their appropriate position and getting them to function right. The work that I do on buildings I call quantum grid restructuring, because I have a visual image of damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my particular way of seeing it. And in structures, that geometry for me is different from the structure in organic material like a human body. And the damage is coded differently, but it's still a matter of returning everything to its native geometry so everything can work correctly.
Exactly.
So it sounds like you've got a similar concept.
Very similar. And I would say that the principle of shamanic soul retrieval is the closest concept to what exists now, because most of psychotherapeutic work so far was based on release and letting go.
Right.
And not as much on bringing things back.
Right.
And so what you have, which for me, coming from engineering background, it was immediately apparent, because if you have a heating system and it doesn't have enough water in it, you can fire it all you want, but it's not going to heat because it's just not enough water to go around to be heating
right.
your house. So you have to fill it back up. And
right.
To let go because something is not working, you know, so that you have even less. It's, to me, intuitively, it never made any sense.
Right, right. And I think it's a combination of things. The kind of sidestepping from your model, one of the frameworks that I like is Ho'oponopono, which is a Hawaiian process. And the concept there is that we, in effect, are storage devices that carry thoughts and emotions from all our ancestors, the society around us, from everywhere, that they run in the background like spyware. They came from somewhere else. They're not our intentions. They're using system resources, and they're creating things out in the world that we don't want to create, but we don't know they're there.
Right.
And that releasing process basically is an inner conversation where you acknowledge the existence of it and that you're part of the problem, and you ask for that to be transformed. But in many ways, is still like soul retrieval. It's acknowledging that you're part of a larger system and that parts of you are out there doing things you are unaware of, but also there are parts of the universe that are functioning in you that you're not aware of.
Right,
and in some way you need to create balance.
Right. It's reverse of the soul retrieval because, so in my system, the way, and you were talking about protection, I think, last week, that in doing many rituals and shamanic work, protection becomes very important. The deeper you go into darker places and more challenging environments. And the best protection is actually your own fullness, and your own fullness in your space, which is also very precisely defined. We have an energy field around us that we all know, but what is not well understood that it is membraned, just like and that the membrane is the circle on the Vitruvius Man.
Okay.
It's the boundary that corresponds to the crown chakra, and it's the last layer on our field that corresponds to the last chakra on the body. And so it acts as a membrane that separates us from the outside. And so all that parts of ourselves that are somewhere else, the the when the membrane is activated just in the cell, it tracks where things are. And it pulls those parts of ourselves back in through the torsion fields.
So it's both a membrane, an energetic membrane similar to the physical cell membrane, but also a membrane around what some people would call the aura.
Yeah, so we have a field, but we have kind of an undefined notion of the field. Maybe it's here, maybe it ends here, maybe it ends there, but there's a very defined structure, and that's why there's a circle on the Vitruvius Man, because it's one of the most accurate, it's supposed to be the most accurate drawing of the human body, of the proportions of the human body. And the circle is for that reason, and it comes from, you know, this information comes from ancient sacred societies. So it's interesting, I started doing this work with the membrane just as Bruce Lipton started working with the membrane of the cell, realizing that most of interaction between the cell and the rest of the body really happens through the membrane, not through the DNA itself. You're familiar, right, with biology?
Right.
Belief, yeah.
Right.
So,
It always occurred to me that saying that 90% of the DNA had no purpose was a ridiculous thing to say, even biologically. We know it has to do something or it wouldn't be there.
Right. So, so in a way, when you activate the membrane, you activate your immune system. So the field pulls back everything that belongs to it, and it sends back everything that doesn't belong to it. And what doesn't belong to it, through the same mechanism, but in the reverse, goes back to where it belongs. That way, you create the organization universe where everyone can now be working on their own stuff. Because what's interesting, one of the reasons a lot of people don't heal is because they're working on somebody else's issue that just happened to be in their body as if it's their own. Because we're told that everything that's sort of in us, we're responsible for. But it's not true. Only what is ours, we're responsible for. But what is not ours, we're responsible for returning it.
Well, and that's, in the way that I look at it, that's true for empaths who pick up the feelings and the thoughts of people around them and don't realize that they aren't their own. And also for people that are being affected by ghosts or other entities and have no idea that that's going on.
Exactly.
So that there's another intelligence operating and affecting them.
Exactly. So when I start healing, the first thing that we do before we work on anything that the person thinks it's absolutely them, we say, let anything that is not me that is related to this situation or that trauma, to that experience, goes back to where it belongs. And then the parts of me that maybe got lost to that experience come back, and now I can work on my stuff.
Right.
And so everything is kind of, it's like spring cleaning, you know. Everything is put in order, and then everything works beautifully because the body is very happy to work with us on our own stuff, but it will absolutely not work on somebody else's energy. It's just like when you have organ transplants, right?
Right.
And the body rejects it, so it will not work on somebody else's energy.
Right.
Especially a really great example is prenatal trauma, where people are, I think, growing more aware of that, where, let's say, somebody will be living through their life feeling like their life is threatened somehow, while they actually in their own history, they never had an incident.
Right.
An incident where their life, in fact, was threatened, and then you realize that something happened to their mother when they were inside in utero.
Right.
the mother's life was threatened, and that thought, that trauma imprint just went through the placenta, you know, into the baby's field, and now born with that.
I want you to hold that thought, and I want to hear a whole lot more, but we're going to need to go to break. I'm here with Yulia Cohen. Her website is healingwithouteffort.com, and we're going to hear more about her process of energy restructuring right after these messages here on the Farkas Files. Truth is in here somewhere. Stay with us. Come on back for more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
That was a joke.
Oh.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you.
My name is Meera Batra. I have been in this country 32 years, and this is how I live united. America has always been the land of promise, and in my community, many families have come for a better life. Coming from another culture myself, I know the desire to become part of a community, to feel at home, and to gain the tools for our children and families to succeed. So I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to look beyond their histories and to see what opportunities are available. We help them get involved with their kids' schools, network within the community, and when we do, we unite them. We make the community stronger. What I do is something I wish someone had done for me, and I am so grateful I am able to. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunities and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Sassy. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Trouble on Rock Hill.
Ain't nothing like running up and down Rock Hill.
Hey, let's move this rock.
Whoa! Sassy, Johnny's stuck under that rock. Yeah, girl, go tell Mr. Gunderson to bring his truck. You'll tell him, but only after you dispel a stereotype associated with shelter pets? People think shelter pets come with lots of initial veterinary costs?
It's dusty under here.
But in reality, most shelter pets have been vaccinated, neutered, and microchipped in case they get lost?
My pants ripped.
Sassy, Johnny needs help. What Johnny really needs is more discipline and better parental supervision? You use big words, Sassy.
Still under the rock.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
We're back with Yulia Cohen having a wonderful discussion about her energy restructuring process. I got to tell you, I look forward to the Sassy public service announcements every week. They just crack me up. So, Yulia, are you with us?
Yes.
So, tell us some more. Well, first of all, I want to give out the phone number for people to call in if they would like to join the conversation. You can call in right now at 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Join the conversation. Ask us questions. So I want to hear more about how you do this process of energy restructuring. Is this something you have to do in a personal in-person session? Is it something you do remotely?
I'm at that point where I can do both, and even if somebody, if I'm doing it in person, I don't have to touch the person. And a lot of the time, what I really like to empower people, so They do the invocation themselves, you know, the invocation mm-hmm. that activates the field. And then I hold the space. So they have an experience, as you said, you know, it's really important to have an experience first of the energy actually coming back instantly. And that is something that we really, in a sense, we're wanting that to happen, but we're not ready. So even with all this conversation of ascensions and people are saying that they are moving into different frequencies, but in reality, it's really hard. And this is just my observation. I run meetup groups where I introduce people to this information and this kind of healing. It's really hard for people to wrap their mind around the fact that their trauma can just be resolved.
Yes, everybody is very attached to their trauma and their story and things being hard. So instantaneous healing is a difficult concept.
It's a difficult concept. And I don't know if necessarily people are attached. I think they literally had never had an experience. It's like, you know, before when we had keys and we didn't have a touch screen, so till you kind of touch the screen, you don't understand that there is this different paradigm, right, of touching right. the screen where you don't have to type anymore. So I think it's kind of on that level. But once you give someone an experience, then it starts settling in. But if you want, I don't like being cryptic because we get loose, start losing people. Would you like a Reader Digest version of what torsion fields look like and how they work?
that would be great.
So I like to offer to people, imagine a spring, right? You know that they have this collapsible spring that's like a toy,
mm-hmm.
a coiled spring.
So it would look like a slinky.
Like a slinky, right. And sort of when you pull on it, it kind of goes in one direction, right? And then when it collapses back, there is a torque in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the torsion fields work. That's the theory.
So it's a release of energy mm-hmm. When the shape of the field changes.
Right, and it's released in the quantum field. Sometimes the other person holds your energy, so if it's not in somebody else's field, it's just somewhere in quantum field. And it kind of torques out, and there's a left and a right spin. So one spin moves it out, and then all you need to bring it back is just reverse the spin. And mm-hmm. It kind of whoosh and just like comes back in immediately. That's why it works so fast.
And this is all done with intention and visualization, or is there some other process?
Basically, all this information is already encoded into our field. So if we think ourselves as a cell, right? If we really literally think of ourselves as a cell on an energetic level, then the processes encoded in the field, well, we don't have to think about them. They really actually happen on its own. And a lot of the time, what I like is when the field is activated, you just give it an instruction and you say, I would like to know if any part of me is lost to this experience. And how much? And then you watch how much energy comes back in. And then there is kind of, you don't need to do much therapy convincing person whether that actually happened or not.
Right.
So I can give you an example if you want to.
Good.
Does it make sense so far?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Well, you know, it makes sense to me. One of the things, and it probably makes sense to a substantial part of our audience, but one of the things that I realized a long time ago is most people haven't caught up with Einstein and what he talked about 100 years ago, much less quantum theory. So,
right. So you know, everything, when we talk about quantum physics, it might sound obscure, but there's always a way of taking it down to human level. And mm-hmm. I like because I also have sort of civil engineering background, right? I like to think about buildings and structures. And so if you think of a hurricane and just going over the city, and then you come and you look at the disarray, right? You come to a building and it's like, okay, there was a door here and now it's over there, right? And the window is kind of broken, and you know, the part that was supposed to be here is somewhere else. And you can do therapy on it, but what you really want to do after you survey, right, the destruction, you want to start putting it all back together.
Right.
And that's pretty much what happens to us in trauma. And even we don't think about it. I had a conversation with someone recently in a car accident. We know mm-hmm. that the body of the car gets distorted, right, if it was a really serious accident. But the same impact, that the same shape of the impact that the body of the car would have, the energy field has.
Right.
And so what you actually do is you, like they do in a body shop, you know, they pull things out and if they can, and they give the car back its shape. You need to do the same thing with the field. And in doing it, a lot of the time, in sort of kind of reverse engineering, well, I can reconstruct what exactly happened. I become curious and I say, okay, did that happen this and this and this way? You can actually tell in how the energy field, when it starts resuming its shape, it shows you the steps of the impact.
Right, right.
Like there was one case where it wasn't that the person was hit, but her mother was in a passenger seat and the mother was hit. And what happened to her was not direct impact of the car, but the fear as she reached towards her mother that, you know, her mother might have been killed by that car hitting.
Right. And so it's the emotional trauma causing the same kind of damage as a physical trauma could.
Well, it's actually, yeah, for her it was more emotional. It was a little bit less of an impact, even though there was an impact as well, because the car was mm-hmm. hit. But it was also, I could see that somebody else was hit first.
Mm-hmm.
And then this person not just were hit, but they also had an emotional reaction.
And you can see this in the distortion of the field, which you can see in your altered state. Looking at it,
I see it actually as I invoke the principle and I say I would like things to start coming back together
mm-hmm.
from into the shape in which they used to be, and in the energy moving. So it's actually even though I've developed a way of seeing things clairvoyantly,
mm-hmm.
I found out that there's still only so much I can see statically. But I seek information completely when there's an invocation of returning the energy back, and then you see the actual impact.
Right. You see the change, so you see the area where the change is happening.
And you know, like if you make analogy with building a house, so you have a blueprint, and then you have all the materials that you need, but till the house is actually built, right? You don't know whether it's going to go into finishing it, because there'll always be surprises, right? There'll always be something that somebody didn't think about or couldn't even imagine. So the actual process becomes completely known when it's completed.
Right.
So
right.
There's a lot of information in the energy as it's being activated and it moves back and it organizes the system, and then it all becomes very clear.
So describe a session using your system.
Okay. So for example, I was running a meetup recently. It was a discussion group for survivors of narcissistic abusers. people who were in relationship with narcissistic abusers and their survivors now. Mm-hmm. And these are people who are very traumatized. And so we've been having a conversation about it, and I was talking to them about the loss of energy that happens in such a relationship and kind of fragmentation of self. And it was really clear that it was not, people were nodding, but it wasn't really going very far. So I invited a volunteer for demonstration. And this person said, since my relationship, I've had dramatic loss of energy. She said, I'm usually very, you know, on the go person, active, doing million things, loving it. And something happened to me. It's just everything is an effort. And I'm just not nearly the way I used to be. And it's really of concern to me. And it's a young person, you know, maybe someone in her late 20s, early 30s. Mm-hmm. So she said, since their relationship, right? So if you're listening to the language, it sounds since the relationship ended. And there was something, my intuition told me to do it in two segments. And another interesting thing about the working with the quantum field, the notion of the boundaries is not just important for our own field, because it allows us to define a vessel into which the returning energy can come and be held there. But it is also very important when you start navigating the quantum time, because the only way to interact in the quantum field is by using boundaries. It's the boundary that you throw on the object of your interest, where you tell the universe how you want to get information or what it is that you want to have information about.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a book written, which I wrote, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. I can't remember now. And at that time, people didn't understand what I was talking about, but I was quoting a mathematician and psychologist. He was a British scientist, Spencer Brown, who in 1969 actually made the claim that in order to enter any relationship with the universe, you enter that relationship by defining boundaries. And at that point, people didn't want boundaries. Everybody was into oneness.
Right.
So people were getting very angry at me for defining some kind of imposing structures where they were trying to break structures, right, and become more fluid. And what happens is that the boundaries do not separate you. They actually deepen the kind of information you can get, because in order to get the information, there have to be a resonance between you and the object of your interest. So you have to have two things. You know what I'm saying? So you say, it's me, and this is what I'm interested in, and I would like to have information about that in relationship to me. So when we start working with the quantum field, if we do not work with boundaries, we just get enmeshed and lost. And it will become very confusing.
And that's actually a concept that I use in terms of clearing dark entities. There are a lot of people who say, if we just use white light and love, it'll all be perfect, it'll all work.
Sure.
And which is not true when you have a powerful dark entity. They don't believe that way, and they'll do what they want.
Actually, they're attracted to the light.
Right.
It's
yum,
yum.
Right, exactly. It's tasty. So when I say no, the way that love works is that you have to have good, solid boundaries and be the guardian of the boundaries for yourself and those that you love. And a lot of people get really angry about it because it's a very different way of looking at things.
It's the same. And actually, this boundary, you don't even have to hold them. You just need to enter into the ownership. It's like Jedi, you know, principle. You become the force that gives this boundary to you, and then it gets activated. So that's kind of the process that they do. It's almost like this Jedi-like process of becoming one with that force that will then work on your behalf, and you become one with that. So anyway, so this is what we do. So I suggested to her, I said, let's go back and take the segment of time, you know, by putting a boundary around it that encapsulates the period of time where you were in relationship. And let's ask back for the energy that you lost while you were in a relationship, if that had happened. So we do the invocation, and huge amount of energy, like this flow of energy, comes rushing into her heart chakra, from sort of in front of her into her heart chakra, and fills her up. And as that does, there's a part of her that also sinks into the body through the crown chakra down. So right away, you asked me a question, how do I know? This is even without using my clairvoyant abilities beforehand. Just by using this invocation, it gives me information that she lost some energy through her crown chakra to something that was in front of her. And because it was such a big loss, part of her kind of jumped out of her body, dissociated.
Mm-hmm.
There's this two entries of integration, one as the energy comes back, and another part of her goes, you know, like it's all right. Back now, and kind of sinks in and embodies. So then I say to her, I said, having like, when I do the reading of your energy, this is what it looks like. Does it remind you of any particular event? And she says, oh, but of course. What happened, we were having fights, and there was this one particular fight, sort of at the end of our relationship, where I said, I would give anything to have it solved, to have this fight resolved. And she said, I felt this energy just drain out of me. Okay?
Yep.
So I said, great. So we established that it was a real event. The energy came back instantly, right? So now let's do the other part, because you had an impression that the loss of energy kind of happened since the end of the relationship. So let's encapsulate this segment of time from the point of the end of the relationship to now. And what's beautiful about the boundaries in quantum time, you can be that specific. And so we do the invocation, and not much comes back. Except a little bit in her first chakra, because she had concern now, ongoing concern for her physical well-being, how she's going to survive, right, with dramatically increased level of energy. But not anything near, right, to the amount of energy that was rushing back in during the first invocation. So I don't detect anything, you know, particularly major. And I asked her, what are you feeling now? And you know what her response was? She said, I'm resisting.
Ah.
Can you believe it?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I almost cried. I almost had tears in my eyes, because I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's like all these years of therapy, right, indoctrinated into us that if something doesn't happen, it's because we're resisting. It's not because nothing is happening.
Right.
You understand?
Yep.
And yep, I said to her, it sounds to me like a self-judgment, because I actually don't detect anything happening either. So you're not resisting anything. But I said, how often do you say this to yourself? And she said, oh, my God, a lot. All the time. I said, how often do you make yourself being at fault? And I said, well, sounds like a big loss of energy potentially there. So let's do this invocation and all the energy that you've lost to self-blaming and self-judgment. And huge amount of energy came back in.
Mm-hmm.
In solar plexus.
absolutely fascinating work.
Interesting, huh? And this whole thing probably, I don't know, was 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. So are you're available to people to for them to get treatment from you? Are you also training people?
I'm training, and I have a workshop. I actually have two workshops on relationships, on kind of similar stuff. Scheduled for April 5th as an evening meetup, and then Sunday, April 15th, there's a one-day workshop on divorces and separation, graceful entangling, and that's what we do. We a lot of pain that is remaining after separation, doesn't have to be divorce, just like separations and regular relationships, is because part of our energy and segments, fragments of us, you know, we might have given heart to someone.
Right.
We lost our energy like she did. And then we walk away from the relationship and everybody tells us to just cut, right? Cut the cords, cut the connection.
Right.
And we can't. And we blame ourselves. But the reason the body is resisting, because this part of us is still there. And it's kind of a ridiculous thing to do. I mean, it's actually saying us don't do that, you know, there's still something that's yours there. And the graceful entangling is really bringing everything back together, and there may be parts of that person in you, and you give that back, and then suddenly it's not an issue anymore.
Right.
So it's very...
It's absolutely fascinating work. All the information about your courses and how to find you to have work done is on your website, I assume?
There's a website, and there's also there's a link to my meetup group, but one could go directly if a lot of people are probably familiar with the meetups. So it's meetup.com, and it's Boston Freedom from Trauma.
Anybody in the Boston area can connect to you both through meetup and through your website, which is healingwithouteffort.com.
And anybody out of state can call me, or I do work on Skype. And it's actually as effective, because sometimes it's even more effective because we don't spend energy on sort of personal interaction, right?
Right. Right. Well, I do almost all my work remotely, so I'm very familiar with that one.
And in terms of the quantum consciousness, there's no separation between us, so things work very immediately as well. And this work doesn't require going and re-experiencing the trauma, going back. It's
right.
It's really
right.
It's just really, really healing.
Taking the energy, man.
And inspiring.
Well, this hour has disappeared, and we can obviously talk a whole lot more, and I hope we get a chance to do that. I will be in touch with you just for us to talk.
I would totally love that. As I said when we talked earlier, I don't know how I missed you, but when I started listening to your show, it's just like, you know, it's like being home. Everything that you say, I'm like, yes, 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 yes.
Thank you so much. Well, I'll be in touch so that we can talk. But everybody can get in touch with Yulia Cohen at her website, which is healingwithouteffort.com. She's in the Boston area. My name is David Franklin Farkas. My website is househealing.com. And on the contact page, there's even a link that lets you make a phone appointment with me to get a 20-minute free reading and assessment. We've got some cool things going on with the Farkas Files. You can now go to thefarkasfiles.com and go directly to our Empower Radio page. And you can also find the recordings on iTunes just by searching for Farkas Files. My guest, which is way cool.
Way cool. And you are a very fascinating person. I'm just going to teach him.
Thank you. Thank you. My guest next week is Hialeah Aronson, who is a nurse who specializes in Mayan abdominal therapy, and also, in a totally fascinating parallel way, is involved in belly dancing. So we are going to have a whole experience and understanding of what goes on in the core of the body next week. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. See you next Thursday.